listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We start in the NFL with the coaching carousel that is. We took a deep dive yesterday into the offensive versus defensive coaches that have been hired. Another offensive coach has been hired in New York, this time Adam Gase to the Jets. So, RJ, what does Vegas make of the trend that continues to turn to the direction of offense over defense?
You know, we talked at length yesterday and got a really good response when it came to just how dominant offense is. And I think if you're even a casual NFL fan, you would have said in the last few years, man, it feels like offense is becoming more important. Defense is becoming less important in the NFL. But to the degree that's the case, when we got the numbers out there in front of us, was a real shocker. I think a real eye-opener for a lot of listeners. Let's recap that. The top five, and we're using DVOA, advanced metric, well-regarded. The top five offenses in the NFL are all still playing. They're all part of the division round, all part of the final eight teams. So if you're first, you're in. You're second, you're in. Third, fourth, fifth, you're in. It's pretty good. It's pretty much, if you want to be in, be a top offense. Because if you're in business, whatever goals you're setting, a core question is, what is the key result you need to achieve in order to reach your goal, to reach your objective, right? So if you want to run a 4-minute mile, that's the objective. Now the goal is, okay, I need to have a body fat percentage of less than 15%. I need to have a lung capacity of X. Those are the elements, the building blocks that lead to the objective. What's the objective in the NFL? It's to advance. It's to play deep into the playoffs, ultimately to win a Super Bowl. What are the elements? What are the key results you need? You might say, well, we want a good coach. Well, there's some pretty good coaches that aren't even playing right now. John Harbaugh, very good coach. So what's the correlation between good coach and winning? I think it's fairly high. You might say, okay, well, what's the correlation between defense and winning, advancing in the playoffs? Well, the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 defense are all out. Boy, if 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on offense are in, and 1 through 7 to a team, it's almost like there's an inverse correlation. If you have a good defense, you can't make it to the final eight. I'm not sure about that. But I'm pretty sure if the top five offenses are in, all five out of five, and 0 of 7 top defenses are in, the strongest correlation you can have is going to be offense equals winning. And that wasn't the case years ago. In fact, Fez, when it came to playoff time, it was actually the adage, the assumption was the opposite.
Yeah, defense wins championships. When the weather gets cold, you got to have that dominant defense to get to the Super Bowl. No longer true.
Well, it seems not. Now, I think what we saw yesterday, and it bears repeating, and as we went through the numbers yesterday, and we'll do this quickly, it's hard to have a horrible defense. So those defenses of the final eight are number 8, 9, 10, 11, 16, 19, and 26. So the recipe seems to be, and the 26 is Kansas City. Oh, by the way, they have the number one offense. So you got to have a super offense to overcome having a bad defense, it seems. But if you got a really, really good offense, you can have an average defense. RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. What matters in the NFL today? How do you win? That's what we're discussing. So we segue to coaching. It seems to be, do you want the second? Right now, if you're hiring, if you're making a decision today, this seems to be your decision. Do you want the second best defensive coach? Because there's only been one hire. So the theory is the one hired was the best. Maybe that's true, but let's assume it is. Do you want the second best defensive coach, or do you want the, what, sixth best offensive coach? So on one hand, you can sit there and say, well, you know, a guy like Kingsbury And if he doesn't play Kansas or he plays a Division I team, blah, blah, blah. Okay, all that's true, right? But if defense hardly matters, and we can say, well, this year's an aberration, it's like, okay, well, let's see, right? But if defense hardly matters and offense is king, would you rather have the sixth best offensive coach or the second best defensive coach? There's some billionaires making decisions. Anyone deciding on an NFL coach, ultimately the decision maker is going to be a billionaire, right? Billionaires are saying, give me that guy that could that got fired from his college job because I'd rather him because there's a chance he knows offense compared to maybe a super elite defensive guy because it doesn't really matter anymore. It's almost like if you had a business back in the day that was both cars and buggies, horse-drawn buggies. And there was a time that half your business was horse-drawn buggies and half your business was cars. But each passing year, the cars become more important. And finally, you might want the 10th best car CEO rather than the best buggy CEO. Hopefully defense doesn't go the way of the horse and buggy, but it seems like it might be.
Yeah, you don't want to be making the world's greatest buggy whip. You're still going out of business.
Guys, next we move to some injury news out of the NFL. Todd Gurley, who missed the final two games for the Rams with that knee injury, he is back at practice for LA as they host the Dallas Cowboys this Saturday night. Sean McVay, his head coach, spoke about Todd Gurley.
He looks like Todd. He looks like explosive, great back that we're accustomed to seeing. He's feeling good. He's had a great week of preparation. You know, we're expecting him to be ready to go, and all things are looking in a very positive direction.
So, Fez, Gurley, we're saying offense matters, but passing matters the most, right? If you say, oh, I'd like to have, I mean, think about it. Zeke Elliott, maybe best running back, young running back right now. Him and Gurley, let's say. And then let's say Mahomes, best young quarterback. Boy, would you have to think for a second who you'd rather have, Mahomes or Gurley?
Yeah, give me the quarterback.
So we might say, why do we care? Well, I tell you this, with that Rams team, with Goff, who isn't an elite quarterback today. Now, will he become one? We'll see. But he was a bust in year one. Year two, McVay came in, coached him up, and it was a quantum leap, one that surprised me, to be honest. And then it looked like early this year, he made another leap, Goff. But boy, later in the year, I mean, let's say post that Kansas City game, that big Monday night historic legendary game, and it was, what a game. Goff has been what? I mean, where's Goff? From that game on, Fez, where's Goff 1-32?
He's been right around 20, a below average quarterback. That play action to Gurley was so important to his passing numbers, especially after Cooper Kupp went down one of his wide receivers.
And I think that's the key question. We're talking with Steve Fezzik, NFL expert, straight out of Vegas. The key question to me is, how much was Gurley being hobbled and in some games absent the key to Goff's struggles, and how much of it is Goff? Now, obviously, we don't know exact numbers, but as a professional batter, what's your take?
I think that a big part of it was Gurley being hobbled. When you watched the game against Chicago at Chicago, Goff just could not perform when the Bears didn't have to worry about Gurley. And even the Eagles game, Gurley not 100%, and then Goff's performance just, it almost seemed mentally, he was like, oh, I don't have this running game that I can rely upon. It really seemed to have a negative aspect of Goff's game, knowing that he couldn't rely on the run game.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. Now, the question is, do we know how healthy Gurley is? What we know for sure is he didn't play in week 16 or 17, correct?
Correct.
And he had a bye week. But what motivation would McVay, if anything, if McVay is saying, and we have the sound that we just listened to, do you think McVay wants the opponent to know, the Cowboys to know, how good Gurley is? Wouldn't you think maybe if Gurley was still pretty much hobbled that he would think, oh, I hope Dallas really thinks he's healthy so we can use him more as a decoy? And then vice versa, let's say Gurley were 100%, wouldn't you want the team to think, oh, don't worry about Gurley. He's hardly going to make it to the stadium on that leg. Right? So in a weird way, metagame style, McVay's a brilliant coach by all accounts, a brilliant person. What's his motivation to tell the truth?
He has a negative motivation.
I think there's an inverse correlation to the truth. So maybe, now this is cynical.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
We got Greg Cosell with us. 40 years NFL Films. We spend all week trying to figure out the questions, and then we get the answer from Mr. Cosell. Greg, how are you?
Yeah.
Good to have you on, Greg Cosell. Okay, I've been hearing for years now, running backs are borderline interchangeable. Oh, Le'Veon Bell's out? Okay, put this fellow in. I hadn't necessarily heard of him, but now he's really good. But with Gurley, with the Rams, it feels different. I know they've had some good rushing days without him, but it feels like Gurley is key to the Rams. Is that true? And if so, why?
Well, my guess is defensive coordinators would view Gurley different than C.J. Anderson. They're an offense that's really well schemed. Well, it's a well executed offense. So I think there are backs that can gain yards. But I think when it comes to the overall play of Todd Gurley, what he brings not only as a runner but certainly in the pass game, which is a critical element to what they do. My guess is that defensive coordinators would tell you that he's far more effective and far better than someone else that they would put out there. But, you know, that's an interesting question that people have been saying for years. And obviously when the Giants drafted Saquon Barkley, that question came up again. And there are people to this day who obviously believe that the Giants made a terrible mistake taking Saquon Barkley instead of a quarterback. And you can look in history, recent history, and see that there's examples of both. You know, when Marshawn Lynch was in Seattle, RJ, people, you know, and then he left, they couldn't run the ball for quite a few years after that. So there's examples on both sides.
True. Do you think, and again, as it's funny, right? I am a professional in a way with the NFL, but in another way, I am very accepting of the fact my X's and O's are limited relative to coaches or an expert like you. Do you feel like, this is my gut instinct, that finding just a runner these days is easy or easier, but finding a guy can run and catch passes is the real challenge?
Well, certainly there are guys who are runners who are not great pass catchers. And, you know, we'll see as we go forward with that. But I guess the question would be, and I guess different people would answer this differently. Do you think anybody could do what Ezekiel Elliott does for the Cowboys?
Well, the question becomes, even if they can, how valuable is that differentiation? That's the debate.
Well, then it depends. It also then depends on how you choose to play. If you're going to build your offense, which most people nowadays believe maybe is not the right way to do it, although it's interesting, as we get into the playoffs, we sort of get back into that a little bit. There's most people believe nowadays that building your offense starting with the run game is maybe not the best way to go. Although one could argue the Rams do that, and they're pretty good on offense. But the Cowboys clearly do that because they're a team that does not ask Dak Prescott to do very much. They play with their run game and their defense, and then they get into the fourth quarter, and that's where Prescott's ability to improvise and use his legs becomes a factor. But they're clearly an offense that's built on the running back as the true foundation.
That's Greg Cosell, executive producer and analyst, NFL matchup on ESPN, RJ Bell straight out of Vegas. We've got a stat, a trend, that says first-time starters in the playoff for quarterbacks, when they play against non-first-time starters, so inexperience against experience, that based on the Vegas perspective, the team with the virgin starter has only exceeded expectation 2 out of 20 times. So, like, shockingly, boy, because we always hear experience matters with quarterbacks in the playoffs, but that 2 out of 20 number is such an eye popper. If I wouldn't have told you that number and I would have said how important is quarterback experience in the playoffs and why, what would you share with us?
Well, See, to me, and I know that number probably from your perspective seems like a large, a high number, or a low number, whatever your point of view is. But see, I would look at those things as case by case, and not only a function of the quarterback, but a function of many other variables. And with, everything can be reduced to a single variable if that's all you want to look at. I think, and because I'm more process-based than results-based, and you're probably more results-based, I'm far more process-based. So I don't just look at that as a stat like that and go, well, that proves it. You know, first-time starters can't win in the playoffs. I don't see it like that. I would want, my first question would be, well, what was the game? Who are you talking about? Let me know about the teams, not just to take the stat at face value.
Yeah, so agreed, and that's why I wanted that process perspective is, do you think there's valid reasons that a virgin starter is going to struggle in the playoffs even more than the regular season?
I'm sure you could make a case that there's valid reasons, because in the playoffs, people will tell you that everything happens a little quicker. You usually see a few different things than you've seen during the regular season. And if you lack experience, then you may not be in the best position to respond and handle that. So, there's probably valid reasons, but I don't think that those are the only reasons, is what I'm saying.
Last question for Greg Cosell. You can follow him on Twitter for more, at Greg Cosell. So looking at DVOA from Football Outsiders, the top five offenses all are still playing, all in the final eight. The bottom, or check that, the top seven defenses, not a single team is left playing. So
right.
Would you say, and obviously it could be a slight aberration any given year, but would you say that even compared to 6-7 years ago, the importance of offense versus defense, the chasm between the two is wider than ever, and at a faster pace it's growing than you've ever seen?
Well, again, there's many variables there. I think the game is clearly geared toward the offensive side of the ball right now. So you're going to have bigger offense, but we've also seen that there's been some lower scoring games as well, and that's a relative term, obviously. I think we're past the point for the most part of seeing 10-7 games, but you take a team like the Colts, I guess they're not in the top, whatever it is, top 5, top 10, but over the last 9 or 10 weeks of the season, they've been, if I'm not mistaken, one of the best defenses in the league in a number of statistical categories. So again, I think there's a context to those kinds of things, and there's the sample size to me in for one given year does not then lead to me suggesting that there's a big cyclical trend in the nature of the NFL. It's just like after that Monday night game when the Rams beat the Chiefs and both teams scored in the 50s, we were led to believe that that was going to be the nature of the NFL, and clearly it did not turn out that way. So to me, the sample size is not large enough to make any definitive judgment about that.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
To the NBA we go. We've got a doubleheader on TNT tipping off in about 10 minutes from now in South Beach. It's the Celtics at the Heat right now on pregame.com. Boston, a 2.5-point favorite.
So, Fez, this is tough. You got your sheet in front of you, but the mic, can you look at the sheet and stay on the mic? This is a big challenge. Go.
I can. I'm leaning to Boston here. Boston minus 2.5. Why is the spread so low? Boston's a whole lot better than Miami. Well, it's because Boston is playing back-to-back nights. But because Boston won 135-108 last night against Indiana, none of their starters had to play more than 25 minutes. So because of that, I don't expect the normal back-to-back will apply. I like the Celtics in this game.
Boy, you did it, buddy. I mean, I gave you the music trying to throw you off a little bit. You just went right through it like nothing.
What music?
Guys, after the Celtics and the Heat, it is the Thunder at the Spurs. Oklahoma City, a 1-point favorite.
What music? Now, that was funny. Go, Fez.
All right, I'm going to lean to Oklahoma City. Normally, I'd have concerns because they just lost as an 8-point favorite at home against Minnesota. But remember, Minnesota just fired their coach, Thibodeau, and we got a Herculean effort out of Minnesota in their first game after Thibodeau was fired. That's why Oklahoma City lost that game. I think they win this game against the Spurs.
I got you that time. Still, though, now, do you like that or lean?
That's a strong lean.
And the first one you like?
I do.
So repeat the two.
So I like the Celtics. I lean to Oklahoma City.
And that's TNT doubleheader tonight.
Yes.
Guys, we have a best bet out of college basketball. That's right. College basketball right now.
And this is different because we, listen, 200 stations straight out of Vegas, about half of our listeners don't even bet. So what we're going to do once a week is spend 60 seconds on one college basketball game that's not necessarily a big game. This one's actually a big game that Brad is betting the most money on. Brad, go.
Yeah, best bet for me, Oregon, UCLA, over the total. We're going over 147.
So this isn't just a college basketball game. It's a total.
It's a total in college basketball.
And the number's 147.
147. On one side of the ball, you got an Oregon team much more likely to play with some tempo. Why? Their 7'2" center, Manute Bol's son, is out for the season. And their first game that's went over in the last seven happened in their last game without the first one, without Bol. So expect up-tempo for Oregon Ducks. Fez.
Yes, and UCLA, no team has been...
So, Fez, you like the same pick. This is like a kind of a double team.
I love this over 147. When Steve Alford was coaching the Bruins, they were 8-2 to the under. He got fired. So in comes interim head coach Bartow that loves to run. The last two UCLA games, 162 and 181 points, RJ. It's a totally new UCLA team.
So both of you guys on over UCLA tonight. That's an ESPN game.
A victim of the infamous Malachi Crunch.
If you got two of them, you got to take it seriously. You know, I want to talk Rams just a little bit more. This is one of those games I could see laying the lumber with the Rams on the spread, but I actually like the Cowboys on the money line even more. You're like, wait a minute, those are two opposite things. The question is, how is the game going to be played? If it's a tight game, where Dak's ability to scramble, control the ball on Dallas is going to matter, I think Dallas has a heck of a chance to win a tight game. I just think when you have a touchdown underdog, oftentimes the lines, or you're going to be down 14 at some point, and I think Dallas really would struggle in that spot. So my thought is, if you like the Cowboys, look at the money line because you get a jumbo payout, and that's probably the type of game you have a chance to actually win the game with Dallas.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.